I'm Maryland Morning producer Matt Purdy. This is a special podcast we've put together with all of our interviews with the candidates vying for the Democratic nomination for governor. We've arranged them in alphabetical order. We begin with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown.
This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Maryland's primary election for governor is just under 7 weeks away, on June 24th. Last week, we spoke with the Republican candidates for governor. This week, we're hearing from the major Democratic candidates for governor. Yesterday, we spoke with candidate and Maryland Attorney General Doug Gansler. Joining us today is Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. He lives in Prince George's County, and he joins me on the line from his campaign headquarters there. Welcome back to the show.
Hello, Sheila. It's great to be back on the show with you.
Now, what would your top priority be as governor?
Well, first of all, I'm running for governor because I, you know, believe that this is a great state. We've built the best of the nation schools. We have one of the strongest economies in the nation. We lead on college affordability. But I'm running because I believe that we can build a better Maryland and build a better Maryland for more Marylanders. So in direct response to your question, we do that by growing the economy, creating jobs and ladders of opportunity for more and more Marylanders to, you know, fill those jobs of today and tomorrow. I just recently rolled out a 5-point job creation economic growth plan, and it relies on on infrastructure investments and, you know, educating and training Maryland workers in high demand jobs. We focus a lot on how we support small and entrepreneurial businesses that fuel Maryland's economy. Also, how we can make government more responsive to Marylanders and the business community. And finally, comprehensive tax reform and what relief we can provide to working families and to incentivize employers to invest in job-creating activities in Maryland, while at the same time protecting our priorities in education and safety and health and the environment.
I'm glad you mentioned the jobs plan that you unveiled this week. Lots of points to it, very, very comprehensive in that sense. What is different about these plans than what the O'Malley-Brown administration has been doing for two terms?
Well, I don't think the question is necessarily different, but what's next, right? So we have a strong economy. U.S. Chamber of Commerce ranks us number one for innovation and entrepreneurship. There are industry sectors that are still recovering from the recession. And with greater investments in infrastructure, we can certainly not only kickstart that sector, construction, not only deliver the infrastructure that supports, you know, expanding communities and quality of life, but the indirect jobs. So a big piece of my jobs plan is using Maryland's resources, whether it's our operating budget or our capital budget, to make investments in projects like the Red Line, in Baltimore City and Baltimore County, which is a $2.6 billion project, thousands of construction jobs, and supports many indirect jobs as a result of the economic growth around infrastructure. The Purple Line in the National Capital Region, Montgomery and Prince George's County, it's a $2.3 billion project with the ability to create thousands of construction jobs. And studies that have looked at both of those projects show that it'll result in tremendous revenues to the state as you create jobs, as commerce grows around these two projects, the transit centers, the metro stops along the line. And in fact, it's that revenue that's going to enable us to make the investments and pay for the jobs plan that I just recently rolled out.
On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. He's seeking the Democratic nomination for governor. You mentioned comprehensive tax reform as part of your jobs plan, and there's this striking chart on your website with five columns and many, many points for the other elements of your jobs plan. And under taxes, it just says, create a blue ribbon commission on tax reform. What would you do?
Sure. I mean, tax reform is a very difficult and complicated undertaking. What I don't support is sort of piecemeal tax reform. I don't support, you know, to reduce the corporate income tax, as you know, the Attorney General proposed, which would leave the next governor with a $1.6 billion hole in their next budget, but rather to look at all of Maryland's revenue streams, whether it's the personal and corporate income tax, the sales tax, the property tax, and with three sort of goals or principles in mind. Number one is, how can we reform the tax code in a way that provides relief to working families in Maryland's middle class? The second thing, and this is why you see it under the jobs plan, is how can we reform and what are the steps we need to do to incentivize employers to invest in job-creating activities in Maryland, whether it's tax relief, whether it's tax incentives, but that's an important principle. And then the third is, whatever we do to reform the tax code, to ensure that we can protect the investments and the progress that we've made in public education and public safety and in the environment and expansion of, you know, public health like Medicaid. So this Blue Ribbon Commission will be guided by those three principles, and we'll look at the entirety of the tax code and not only the revenues, but also the impact it has on expenditures. I do believe it's reckless and irresponsible on a campaign to make a commitment to lower a tax, particularly a significant reduction in revenues, without a full discussion of what the offsetting revenues or reductions in expenditures need to be. So that's why you see that in the jobs plan, and that's why there isn't a lot of detail there, because this is what this group of smart individuals will do during the first year of the Brown-Ullman administration.
Let me shift gears. How does your leadership style differ from Governor O'Malley's?
Well, let me start by saying how Martin O'Malley and I differ, right? I'm a first-generation American. I spent 30 years in active and reserve military duty, 8 years in the General Assembly. And, you know, Martin O'Malley and I share so many values and shared goals. My leadership style, it probably differs from Martin O'Malley and others. While Governor O'Malley's been an effective leader, our styles are different. I am a very collaborative leader, not to say that he doesn't collaborate. But I believe that because of or due to my 8 years in the General Assembly, that sort of deliberative, democratic, governed by consensus and majority vote, it has become a big part of my leadership style.
Well, I ask it because you know the famous line from John Nance Gardner, who was Franklin Delano Roosevelt's vice president, that the vice presidency, I'll put it more delicately than he did, isn't worth a bucket of warm spit. He might have said the same thing about being lieutenant governor. I mean, you're inherently sort of overshadowed. So what did you do as lieutenant governor that you think prepares you to be the state's executive decision maker?
So in the O'Malley-Brown administration, we have positioned the office of the lieutenant governor in a way that we've never seen in the history of this state. I mean, the short history of the lieutenant governor, you know, about 40 years. Over the last 8 years, I've had the opportunity to work with, for example, advocates in the domestic violence community. And I've led, you know, a number of legislative initiatives. And as a result of the work that I've done and the work that advocates and others have done, we've driven violent against women and children down by over 20% in the last 5 or 6 years. I've had the opportunity to lead the state's effort on the base realignment and closure, which is a major economic development initiative and boost for the state of Maryland. You'll remember in 2007, 2008, we were coordinating infrastructure investments and priorities in higher education and K-12 education to accommodate the thousands of jobs that would be coming to Maryland as a result of base realignment and closure. And just recently, a report from DBED showed that, you know, we've You know, the original goal was 15,000 direct jobs. We've supported 19,000 direct jobs. And together with the direct and indirect jobs, 49,000 jobs since 2007 have come to or have been created in Maryland as a result of base realignment and closure. And I coordinated that effort, coordinated the state's response and support to base realignment
and you closure. We're almost out of time, and you know I have to ask you about this because one of the big jobs you had as lieutenant governor was being the governor's point man on the rollout of the Affordable Care Act. You know the criticism of the botched rollout. What do you say to people who question your ability to run the state when the highest profile task you've been put in charge of had so many problems?
Yeah, look, I'm not new to healthcare. Over the last 8 years, we've enrolled over 500,000 Marylanders and connected them to affordable quality health care. When we set out to launch Obamacare, and we launched our website just like the president and the federal website, we had technical challenges. And, you know, I certainly, you know, sincerely regret that any Marylander was inconvenienced in accessing the website. And I don't think there's anyone more frustrated than I was. And that's why I took the action that I did. I, you know, reorganized the project and replaced the project leadership. We refocused and fired the vendors who didn't perform as we contracted. And after evaluating the resources and the capabilities at the exchange, you know, this post-launch period, you know, we plussed up staff at the call centers and navigators around the state. And the result, you know, we enrolled 330,000 Marylanders through Obamacare. And these are real Marylanders. I mean, this is that single mom, the same person we were fighting for when we increased the minimum wage, this single mom on minimum wage who now can afford quality health care through the exchange. The
Lieutenant
family.
Governor Brown, we have to leave it there. I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, he's a Democratic candidate for governor. You can watch the first debate among Democratic candidates tonight on MPT from 7 to 8 p.m. We've got information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. This is Maryland Morning on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass. There's more ahead. Stay with us on 88.1.
You're listening to a special podcast we've put together with all of Maryland Morning's interviews with the Democratic candidates for governor. We continue with Attorney General Doug Gansler.
Thanks, Nathan. This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Maryland's primary election is 7 weeks from today, June 24th. Last week, we spoke with the Republican candidates for governor. This week, we'll be hearing from the major Democratic candidates for governor. One of them is Doug Gansler, Maryland's attorney general. He lives in Montgomery County, and he's with me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Don't forget, I work in Baltimore, though.
Yes, you do work in Baltimore, and you're here with us now. Why are you running for governor?
I believe in public service. I believe in the power of government to actually effectuate positive change for people. I've been in public service the last 22 years, and I guess maybe it's my father was the Undersecretary of Defense of the United States. My mother's a public school teacher. We just were raised with the idea of giving back. And so my currency is, if you will, is to try and help people who are victims of unfairness or injustice to fight relentlessly to get them justice and fairness and get things done.
I got it. But you are in public service, and many, well, at least your predecessor served more than two terms as Attorney General. Why go for governor?
You know, I was a federal prosecutor for 6 years and the state's attorney for 8 years. I've been attorney general for 8 years. I believe that there is a value in getting new set of eyes and a fresh set of approaches to government jobs. The attorney general position uniquely qualifies one to be governor because we represent every state agency. We are intricately involved in the decisions made in state agency. I've run government agencies for the last 16 years, balancing budgets, having clean audits, being effective. And I think at the next level, there's so much that needs to be done. You know, what motivates me particularly in this election is that we have the second worst minority achievement gap in the country. So I go to schools in Baltimore City, and it's just not fair that we, in our state at this time, that we have schools like that. And there are people that are, you know, people I'm running against that say, well, we have the number one schools in the country. The fact of the matter is it really depends on what where you're born and what you look like, whether you have one of the top schools in the country, because certainly Baltimore City, if the public schools here are certainly not number one in the country. We need to fix that.
You are being taken to task this morning by the leaders of the state teachers union, MSCE, about your latest TV ad in which you call for skill over seniority in the classroom. What change would you make in the teacher's contract?
Well, I didn't know that I was being taken to task. I think that most people would agree that we want to have skilled teachers teaching our children. And I think that we, being a teacher, should be the most revered profession in our society. It's literally how we are going to sustain ourselves. So we have to make sure that we give every child a good teacher. And we ought to be paying our teachers more, the good teachers. If you can go into any school and ask any of the teachers or any of the children, who are the good teachers and who are the bad teachers? And you'll get the same answers. And the ones who are the bad teachers, the ones that are just been sitting around longer and longer and longer are no longer adding any value to the children, they shouldn't be able to work there anymore, just like in every other profession. But we ought to reward those who are good.
So how would you do that?
Well, there's a number of things. We should pay nationally certified, national board certified teachers more. We ought to give more teachers more money that are willing to go into underserved communities and schools that are having more difficulties. But we ought to have a review assessment of teachers. For example, in Montgomery County, they have something called a peer review assessment, a peer assessment review, PAR. And it's a panel of teachers, good teachers, reviewing the other teachers and giving them reports to see how they're doing. Part of that is a testing component. Part of it has to be objective. But like in every other business, it should be much more subjective. So is this a good teacher? Are these teachers teaching the child how to fish, not just give them a fish? You know, and are they really touching the children? Are they making them want to learn? Are they doing a good job? And if so, they ought to be rewarded. But if not, they shouldn't get to teach our children anymore.
But you would continue to base part of teacher compensation on and teacher career path on the test scores of their kids?
Yeah, I think you have to. I think you have to have that as a component of it, but not certainly not the value that we place on it today. Because you're creating an incentive just to teach the test and for teachers to want to go to places where the children are already going to succeed. And we want to make sure that people are willing to go to places which are harder, more difficult places to teach children.
What would be your top priority as governor? What would be different in 4 years if you were governor?
I think that there'd be a lot of difference. One, we'd be effective. We'd get things done. I think the biggest contrast between my opponent and myself is his leadership. The one thing that he's been in charge of, managed in his 8 years of being lieutenant governor, the only time he's ever managed or led anything was to be the Affordable Care Act rollout. Now, I ran President Obama's campaign. I went to the Supreme Court to uphold the Affordable Care Act. I believe we were the only country in the world that didn't provide access to health care for our children. So it's a good thing, but to pay $200 million so four people can enroll in a website is, I think, stark contrast to my role as being head of all the attorneys general in the country, reaching an agreement with the five major banks to get $1.5 billion into Maryland, which has kept tens of thousands of families in their homes that would have otherwise been foreclosed upon. I think there's a marked difference in actually seeing problems getting it done. This biggest substantive difference, I think, would be the economy and jobs. We're getting our clocks clean in terms of our economy. Every year they go to Annapolis, there's a $1 billion deficit. Across the river in Virginia, there's a $1 billion surplus. We have four Fortune 500 companies left. We're 49th out of 50 in personal income growth in Maryland. We've lost over 7,000 small businesses in the last 8 years, and we have 76% more people unemployed. In Baltimore City, 46% of the adult males don't have work. That's unsustainable, so we need to bring jobs back.
And you would do that how?
Well, a number of ways. I think you focus on life sciences and cybersecurity, two industries where we're uniquely situated because we are the only state that has NIH and Johns Hopkins, number one hospital in the country, as well as the University of Maryland Medical System. And we're the only state that has the NSA and Cyber Command Center. And we're the smartest people in the country in terms of advanced degrees, and we're by the federal government. So we have an opportunity to focus on life sciences, cybersecurity.
And you don't believe the O'Malley Brown administration is doing that?
You know, they actually talked about doing some things, and they've made a couple small steps toward it. But not to this. There's no reason why Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Palo Alto, California are booming and we're not. You know, they have Harvard and Stanford. We have Hopkins and we have NIH. So I think we can actually promote far better, those two industries, which have endless growth. But we also have to look at manufacturing. We're 43rd in the country in manufacturing. We have to produce things here. New York now has gone to a completely tax-free, if you come here and manufacture, you won't have to pay taxes. We won't be able to do that, but we can create major tax incentives for manufacturers to come back to Maryland to produce products here.
That's Attorney General Doug Gansler here on Maryland Morning, WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Doug Gansler is seeking to become the Democratic nominee for governor, and we'll be talking with the other two main Democratic candidates this week. I'm glad you mentioned health care. I want to play a clip from one of your first TV ads about that mentions, at least, focuses attention on Lieutenant Governor Brown's handling of the rollout of the Affordable Care Act.
As governor, I'll get tough on insurance company rate hikes, and we'll deliver health care. Because affordable care is a right. That's fair, and that's my fight.
And as I'm sure you know, health insurance rates are set by the Maryland Insurance Administration, an independent state agency. So how would you, as governor, quote, get tough on insurance company rate hikes?
For example, when I was attorney general, they which I still am, tried to artificially raise rates 150% in anticipation of the Affordable Care Act coming in. Now, obviously, the lieutenant governor made it so we didn't actually weren't able to enroll here. But had we been able to enroll,
Wait a minute, there are close to 300,000 people who have health insurance through the Affordable Care Act.
No.
You're saying nobody enrolled?
Well, the last known number we have is 4 people on the website, which was what the $200 million was for. What happened was there's 200 and some odd thousand people were automatically transferred through Medicaid. What the Brown and O'Malley say is 70 something thousand people were able to enroll.
Into
private insurance. But the way that worked was when the website didn't work and they wouldn't go to the federal website like we suggested, Congressman Delaney and I myself suggested they do, which was free and works, 50,000 people a day were signing up, that we they set up these call centers. And so people had to take off work, go to the call center, stand there and enroll themselves by hand, and then working directly with CareFirst, they were literally filling out CareFirst applications. They were sending them to CareFirst. So this wasn't how the Affordable Care Act was designed at all. The last known number we have in terms of how many people were actually able to enroll through the website and actually have choice through the Maryland Exchange, which was what the Affordable Care Act was set up to do, was 4. And that was the Washington Post article.
But I think that was a very early number. But I'll check.
Yeah.
Check on that. But anyway, I want to get back to...
But it's important because...
Essentially, are you saying that the current insurance commissioner has not been tough enough?
Yeah. They need to stand up to the insurance companies when they're jacking up premiums based on anticipation rather than actual reality of what the rates are. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, by the way, there's been a cover-up in terms of what happened with this $200 million. So we don't know exactly how many people signed up on the website, just as a follow-up to the previous thought.
The spending number, of course, that the O'Malley Brown uses for the website is $129 million.
Plus, they're chasing good money after bad. Now they went into another closed room without transparency, without competition, and say, you know what, let's take Connecticut's system and try and retrofit that to Maryland's. It's like insanity trying to do the same thing over and over and getting the same results and instead of using the federal site, which is free.
We're almost out of time, and I do want to pass on to you. We put out a call on Twitter for questions for you, and one person wrote back and said about your plan to lower Maryland's corporate taxes from 8.25% to 6%. They want to know why you want to lower that tax rate. Quote, the middle class needs actual relief, not the 1%.
I totally agree, which is why I was the first candidate for governor to ask for an increase in the minimum wage, and we finally got that. At the same time, we want to reduce slowly the corporate tax, just like President Obama, just like Chris Van Hollen and Steny Hoyer, because right now in Virginia, the rate is 6%. West Virginia is 6.5%. We're at 8.25%. Companies are leaving Maryland in droves because they can't afford to be here. If they can't afford to be here, we don't have jobs. If we don't have jobs, we have a shrinking tax base, and we're not able to do the things as Democrats that we need to do, like public safety and the environment, congestion, and work on our minority achievement gap.
And how would you balance the budget?
Well, the budget has to be balanced every year by law, and I've been balancing budgets for 16 years. I'm the only candidate in the race that's done that. But we need to we need to look at where we're spending. We actually need to be competitive with our neighbors. We have to look at our tax structure overall, and we need to make sure we bring jobs back. Because if you bring jobs back, like I said, more money's coming in. It's a spending. I was an economics major at Yale. I learned very early on that you want to balance what comes in and what goes out.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Maryland Attorney General Doug Gansler. He's a Democratic candidate for governor. Once again, the primary election is June 24th. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, and that's where you'll find links to our interviews with Republican candidates for governor. This is Maryland Morning. Stay with us.
You're listening to a special podcast we here at Maryland Morning have put together with all of our interviews with the Democratic candidates for governor. We continue with Delegate Heather Mazier.
It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Maryland's primary election is 6.5 weeks away on June 24th. Next week, we'll be talking with the three Democratic candidates for attorney general. This week, we're hearing from the major Democratic candidates for governor. We've already spoken with Maryland Attorney General Doug Gansler and Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. And with me today is Delegate Heather Mazier. She lives in Montgomery County. She's here with me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Sheila.
10 years ago, you were a member of the Tacoma Park City Council. You've been a state delegate for Montgomery County for 7 years. You've never held statewide office. Why are you running for governor?
I'm running for governor not because I just want the job. I'm running for governor because I want to do the job. I have, in the 8 years I've been in Annapolis, built a record of bringing people together to get big things done, from expanding health insurance for children, family planning services for low-income women, leading environmental protections in our state. But there's so much more we need to do to help Maryland deliver real results for every family. I want to tackle the income inequality gap in our state. I want to eliminate the achievement gap in our schools. I want to protect our environment for generations and help restore to the Bay to a healthier condition. There's a lot of work to be done, and I'm really excited to be the one to be able to do it.
And you have a lot of issues on your website. What is your top priority?
I think any governor has to make jobs and economic development a top priority. I'm a former small business owner. I know what it's like to create jobs and meet payroll and what the importance to our economy is of supporting our small businesses. But my vision for economic development in this state isn't one that pits workers against businesses. I have something for everyone. I want to make sure that we don't just raise the minimum wage. I want to get us to a living wage. I have things like paid family leave and paid sick leave that I want us to get done. But we can do more for workers when we're able to do more to help small businesses who are supporting them. If we closed one giant tax loophole in our state that allows a handful of companies that operate in other states who are hiding the money they make in Maryland so they don't pay taxes, if they just pay their fair share and make them do what every other company in Maryland is doing and pay their corporate rate, we could generate $200 million in new revenue that I would dedicate to small business tax relief. We can do more for our workers when we do more for our small businesses.
And what form would that small business tax relief take?
I'm open to how we would structure it, but what I've been proposing in the past is that we eliminate the burden of the personal property tax. So many small businesses are very frustrated about this tax. You pay a $400 filing fee every year with the state, and you have to pay a tax on the depreciated value of all the assets on your business. So you've already paid taxes on it once when you've purchased it and paid sales tax on it. But for the remaining life of your business, every single year, you're taxed on the value of that equipment over and over again. We could rebate the cost of that tax with the revenue that we would generate from closing this corporate loophole.
In the area of healthcare, you are interested in exploring a single-payer system in Maryland in which the government pays for all healthcare costs. Why?
Well, the Affordable Care Act is one step towards trying to give more people access to quality, affordable health care. And that's been a cause of a lifetime for me. I've always believed that health care is a right and not a privilege. And by 2017, the federal government gives states the right to seek federal waivers to come up with new initiatives. Vermont is ahead of Maryland in this regard. They've already said, we're going to try to do in Vermont a single-payer approach so that we cut out some of the middleman and be able to provide more people with access to quality health care. I think that it's an interesting model to review and one that I think that Maryland should look at doing by 2017 as well.
How would the state pay for a single payer system?
Well, that's part of what needs to be explored. And actually, I haven't made an actual recommendation in the campaign related to this. It's just something that we've been doing our due diligence on and following closely what Vermont is discussing. But as a concept, I think it's one we should explore.
What qualities would you bring to the governor's office that the other two major candidates would not?
I'm very focused on what we can do together, that we shouldn't be focused on negative aspects of campaigning. And in office, I'm about making sure that middle-class families have an advocate. For too long in Annapolis, we have seen the well-connected and the special interest be the ones that have a bigger voice in Annapolis. Just this legislative session, we saw millionaires giveaway in the estate tax go through the legislative session. Over the first five years of this, it's going to be $432 million. And it's an election year giveaway to the heirs of millionaires. The top wealthiest 3% of the families in our state are going to benefit from this. And at what expense? What are we going to cut from our schools, from our roads, from our hospitals? We should instead be focusing on giving middle-class tax relief. In this last administration, the millionaire's tax was allowed to expire while we raised taxes on everyone else. If we bring back that millionaire's tax, we'd have enough revenue to give 90% of all Maryland families tax relief. I think that there are important decisions to make in whose side you're on, and my administration's always going to be on the side of middle-class families.
And that you see as a difference between you and Doug Gensler and Anthony Brown.
Absolutely.
On 88.1 WYPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Delegate Heather Mazier of Montgomery County. She's seeking the Democratic nomination for governor. You have never held statewide office. You don't have administrative experience. Why are you the right person to do this job?
I have the best record of accomplishments, the best experience, and the best vision for the future of this state. I worked on Capitol Hill. I've been in public office for 20 years now. I worked on Capitol Hill for over a decade. Was domestic policy director for United States Senator John Kerry before, during, and after his presidential run.
Public office, not elective office. Elective office for 11 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been a public servant, working in public office, public service, for 20 years now, starting on Capitol Hill for a decade as John Kerry's domestic policy advisor for his U.S. Senate office before, during, and after his presidential run. I spent time working with nonprofit Community Health Center Association, heading up their state affairs department, where I had a multi-million dollar budget that I managed and helped oversee offices in every state across the country. We were very involved in implementing child health insurance programs all across the country. And for the 8 years that I've been in Annapolis, have built a record of really putting my skills and talents to use to help Maryland live up to its full potential, pushing through legislation that allows young adults to stay on their family health plans until they're 25, coming up with a unique way to find and enroll 50,000 more children in health care, working across the aisle to expand family planning services to low-income women. On multiple issues, when I see a problem and come up with an idea on how to fix it, we know how to go in there and get it done. And I'm excited to bring that kind of tenacity to the governor's office.
Well, let me follow up, because I was struck when I read in the Washington Post a profile of you last August that in which you said if you're not elected governor, you will not run for elective office again. I mean, if you believe so strongly in the value of public service, how would you turn your back on it if you were to lose your first attempt to run statewide?
I'm not turning my back at all, Sheila. The conversation was a little more nuanced than what got reported in the story. The reporter came with an agenda to try to figure out, okay, well, you're not a legitimate candidate for governor. This was back in June when everyone was still saying that I couldn't do this, that, hey, you're not next in line. It's not your turn. Get out of the way. And he wanted to know why I was really doing this. If I didn't have a shot at winning, was I setting myself up to run for Congress? Did I want to run for Senate someday? Was I trying to be an attractive running mate to one of the other major contenders? Did I want to serve in someone's cabinet? Question after question after question kept coming from the place of, you're not a legitimate candidate for governor. every time I tried to re-steer it to, no, I'm not doing this to set myself up for something else. I'm doing this because I am a legitimate candidate for governor, because I'm excited to serve this state, and because I know I'm a better candidate than anyone else in the race. The question just kept coming, and what I was clarifying,
I'll be done with politics. I won't run for elected office again, close quote. Is that a misquote?
I was having a conversation with a reporter about the fact that if I didn't win, I was not going to be in office for at least another 4 years. And I'm not taking, I'm not a plan B person, Sheila. I wasn't sitting there thinking about what I'm doing next. It's hard for me to imagine putting this much effort into this kind of a task again, but who knows what's going to happen 4 years from now. But I made it very clear that my engagement in public office, in public life, would never end, whether I would work in nonprofits or stay engaged with other people's political careers, maybe go into journalism. Who knows? My voice in the public sphere is not something that I said would go away. I just was trying to help the reporter understand that this wasn't a stepping stone to something else.
Let me squeeze another issue in before we're out of time. An issue that you speak about frequently is legalizing marijuana, going beyond the decriminalization of possession of small amounts of marijuana that the legislature voted for this year. You would make marijuana completely legal and you would tax it. Why do you consider that important?
I think our war on drugs has been a failure. Our marijuana prohibition laws have been enforced with racial bias. We know that African Americans and whites use marijuana with the exact same frequency, but African Americans go to jail 3 times more often. It detracts our law enforcement from focusing on more violent and serious crimes. And when we take an underground economy and bring it to the light of day by legalizing, taxing, and regulating marijuana, we generate enough revenue to pay for other critical priorities in our state, like eliminating our achievement gap. It still matters in Maryland what your socioeconomic status is and what your race is to determine whether or not you're going to be successful in school. And we know it doesn't have to be that way. When we invest in early childhood education from birth to age 5, we can give every child a chance to enter school ready to learn at the exact same pace. I have a truly universal pre-K plan to do that, and the revenue that we would generate from marijuana legalization would be put to paying for that program.
We're out of time. We have to leave it there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sheila.
State Delegate Heather Mazier of Montgomery County, she's a Democratic candidate for governor. This wraps up our interviews with the Democratic candidates for governor. We spoke with the Republican candidates last week. The Republicans will debate tonight, 7 p.m., St. Mary's College. We have a link to more information about that at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. We continue our 2014 primary election coverage next week. We'll speak with the 3 Democratic candidates for attorney general. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us on 88.1.
Thanks for listening to this special podcast from Maryland Morning. Check out our website for more of our 2014 primary election coverage. We're at wypr.org/Maryland Morning.